Live from Burbank, California, built completely of latex, it's the Mark Maron Show. And now, he cannot resist being scratched on the stomach, Mark Maron.
Thank you, Jim Earle. How are you, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, lurking conservatives? Welcome aboard. I'm going to tell you something, Jim. I watched last night. There's a lot of things. You know, let me set up the show before I get off on some sort of tirade and talk about who is going to be here tonight. Tonight, in just a few minutes, we're going to have Harlan Williams out here. He's a comic, but he's not just a comic, my friend. This guy is an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
I went to his website. I can't even get stuff up on my website with any consistency. You know why? Because I don't have the time. It's guys like Williams where I ask myself, where the hell does this guy get the time? I know a lot of comics. You know a lot of comics. Most of the comics I know are too insecure to be confidently posting stuff on their website or maintaining their MySpace page. I guess I'm just talking about myself. Or they're too lost in the bong or on the pursuit of pot to do what I... Harlan is selling T-shirts. He's selling children's books. He's selling musical CDs. This guy, you know, he apparently went into comedy, but he had other dreams, clearly. And now that the comedy thing isn't really panning out for him, he's falling back on all this other stuff, which I think is good. I think it's noble. And he'll come in here to defend himself, and maybe we'll read from one of his children's books. Did he bring a children's book? Carlin, did you bring? No, he didn't bring one? All right. Oh, now he's all upset.
Did you buy anything?
Well, of course I did. I bought all the posters from all of Harlan's movies signed, I think. They're going to come signed. Am I right, Harlan? Are they going to come signed to my Half-Baked and, Rocket Boy or in the other one? You were in a couple of Farrelly Brothers movies just pointing at me. He's been in everything. He's one of those guys. Radio's really good for Harlan because Harlan's one of those guys that you see and you're like, oh, yeah, you were that guy. It's not going to work on radio.
I recognize him now.
You do?
And I don't even have my glasses on.
All right. Well, here,
clearly know who he is.
So Harlan's going to be in here a second. I often write my own Harlan Williams jokes. That's how much I like the guy. Because he works in a riff form. I'm not going to talk about him.
You can buy them off his site.
It's wrong of me to talk about him when he's just sitting out there listening and he can't do anything until he gets in here if we let him on. See, depending on what I say right now, we'll see how the little machinations go in his head to determine whether or not he's actually going to come on the show. Because I don't want to take it. You know what I mean? That'll be fine. We were in Ireland together, Harlan and I. Paul Waldman from Media Matters. This is very important stuff. Media Matters is one of the primary things that clogs up my email bank. Media Matters will send literally hundreds of emails. They got people there round the clock watching right-wing talk show, all talk shows, to find the bias in the media. And they're very effective. They've helped me out a lot. They helped the progressive cause a lot. And they're one of the few progressive organizations that on a day-to-day basis make an impact in taking the media to task. I'm excited to talk to Paul Waldman. I also want to talk about his book. He wrote a book called Being Right is Not Enough, What Progressives Must Learn from Conservative Success. I need to know. I need to have some of those questions answered. And finally, thanks to a listener, and I'm not sure who that listener was right now, but I'm going to thank her anyways, who sent me the film about aspartame, which was, what the hell was that film called? Oh, come on now. Come on. I should know what the film was called.
It's called Eating Poison. Aspartame Will Make You Lose Your Memory.
I will tell you what the film was called in just a second. I know I put it up on the blog. If someone could go to my blog out there and figure out hit the link on Betty Martini. But look, aspartame. Don't give me the cut sign, Williams. I'm on to you, man. You want me to do a Harlan Williams joke? Hey there, flip-flop boy. What do you say we get on a pancake and take a ride to the Land of Oz? Hey, get ready for more of that in about a few minutes. Look, aspartame, dude. It's been a few weeks. I've been off it, and as you can tell, my brain is firing on all cylinders. I am completely clean of the stuff, full of caffeine, but no aspartame, and something else I stopped. No nicotine. Well, I am chewing nicotine gum, but at least I'm not sticking big wads of nicotine in my mouth in the form of cigars. Been 5 years off cigarettes, but no aspartame. You know what? I can walk again. And you may think I'm kidding when I say that, but Betty Martini, oh, man. Betty Martini is going to clear that up for us. I just spilled coffee all over my papers. This show is going right down the crapper, but we can't stop.
You know, aspartame never would have made you do that.
Oh,
thank goodness you quit aspartame.
This is a disaster.
And the nicotine, because that never would have happened.
Okay, so let's talk about something else. What am I going to do about this? What am I going to do about the coffee that's collecting in front of me?
Boy.
I'm just sitting here hoping that it doesn't make it. Thank God I'm sitting at a child's desk.
Can we get our...
That's not going to gonna actually spill on the carpet.
Can we get your Filipino manservant in here?
Do we have one still?
Yes.
I thought we lost that when we left Clear Channel. Do we have that? Harlan's willing to do it, but then he'll come in here and say, what Did you have a little spill there, Muffin Head? Maybe we should get in my rocket ship and take a ride to Blockbuster and rent a porn movie. But look,
I understood that fully. I don't know what you're talking about.
Am I wrong, Williams? Am I doing you? Come on. All right, he's going to be out here in a minute. Let's talk about some real stuff because we've got literally just a few minutes left. Here comes somebody with a towel, perhaps. Do we get a towel? You know what's great? I want people to realize that. I'm glad you brought me the name of that. I can't wipe up the coffee that I spilled all over everything with. Thank you, Bill Cohart. Oh, he's pulled a Kleenex, a snot rag out of his pocket to gently daub the coffee that I spilled all over my... Here's what I want to point out to the bloggers who might be listening to this right now. Even though this show may be taped, and I hate to break that to some people that think it's live, did I stop the action? No, I didn't.
No.
Even though I poured hot coffee in my lap, Jim, even though right now I'm in a certain amount of pain, I did not stop the action because I want people to know that we still do a live show.
It happened exactly as you rehearsed it earlier.
Yeah, well, thank God. Thank God it happened just right because it could have gotten on the carpet. As opposed to on all of my notes. I don't need notes anyways. Anyways, I saw your friend, who I'm going to call him your friend now.
My friend who?
Michael Brown.
He's not my friend.
Was on the Colbert Report. You were a Michael Brown apologist.
No,
last
I'm not.
Night. You were a Michael Brown apologist.
Oh, that's BS.
Well, I'll play it back for you.
And that's really strong language for me.
If we had the technology, which we do, but we don't really, to call back your comments about ex-FEMA director.
I dare you. Do it. Do
Michael
it.
Brown, who I said was just a narcissistic pander monkey who only cares about himself, who was not only incompetent but still does not care about people, was on Colbert Report trying to repair his image. And I have a problem with this. You know, John Stewart and The Daily Show is one thing. Colbert is one thing. They're both very funny guys. I appreciate what they do. But some of these Republicans are starting to try to use them to repair their own images. And Michael Brown does not deserve the platform. He does not deserve the opportunity to get in front of the people of this country, especially the people of New Orleans, and sit there and act like he was not 90% responsible for some of the problems down there. And also, he does not get to sit on TV and try to make light of what went on down there. I still, even watching him on Colbert last night, did not get a sense that he really cared about people. I still saw a guy who only cared about himself and only cared about his image in the culture.
Well, I have no way of going in deep inside a man's character or mind and to figure that out. And I cannot comment on the Colbert Report because I did not see it. But
you can go
conference
based
calls,
on actions.
Those the transcripts of the conference calls and the videotape to the conference calls with the White House and Bush.
Yeah.
Clearly had him warning Bush about the inadequacy of FEMA and what was going to happen and the budget cuts.
When was he doing that though? When was he doing that?
He was standing
in the rain. Basically, doing that, standing in the rain. Where was that conversation when he first took the job? Where was that conversation heading into that? When was the conversation heading into the disaster, not days before?
Well, I may be wrong on this, but I think there were a series of warnings and series of
you're a Michael Brown apologist, and that's your choice.
No, I'm not going to completely demonize him. You can demonize him for what he has done.
Okay, that's what I'm doing.
I'm not going to completely demonize him. I think, you should be expending this much energy on Bush because the buck stops there. It's
everybody knows that Bush is done. We got to move on from Bush in the sense that Bush is at 38%. Even Harry Reid, the Senate minority leader, is taking Bush to task. And this is a tremendous showing of backbone. We'll talk about that in a few minutes. I got to get Harland out here because if I don't, he's going to get into his supersonic car and fly to Wonderland. Also, they just passed, FEMA has okayed a lot of people to move back to their homes in New Orleans if they get them 3 feet off the ground.
Yeah.
You know what's ironic about this?
What's that?
Is that most of these are homes that were built after the levees were built. These were homes built in the comfort of the fact that they wouldn't get flooded, and the ones that were built before the levee are kind of okay because they were built on platforms to begin with. So now we got to go back in time because George Bush did not make it possible for the Army Corps of Engineers to do what they were supposed to do anyways. We'll be back in a second with Harlan Williams, the short order news I didn't do. I'll do him with a comedian in the room. He'll have a shot at not laughing at me. So stay with us.
And now he's hard on the outside, rich and creamy on the inside. Mark Maron.
I'm rich and creamy all over, if not flabby.
And now you're wet all over.
I'm not wet all over. We cleaned it up. I cleaned up my play school desk. I moved my letters around and got rid of my Play-Doh and actually wiped up the coffee. Let's do this because we didn't do it before, Jim Earl. A lot happened in the world today, and we want to make sure you're up to speed and informed. So here's tonight's edition of the Mark Maron Show Short Order News. Iran's hardline president Mahmoud Ahmadinejad vowed today that his country won't back away from uranium enrichment and said the world must treat Iran as a nuclear power. And by nuclear power, he means the first country to be incinerated in Armageddon. Iran's president maintains their uranium enrichment is a peaceful energy program aimed at peacefully wiping Israel off the map. A mob of Islamic radicals yesterday stoned the offices of Indonesia's Playboy magazine 5 days after its first copies went on sale. Just like the American version, Indonesian Playboy has an advisor column for all the latest gear like cell phones, garage door openers, and anything else that can trigger an IED. Islamic purists were said to be outraged after learning photographers had airbrushed all the girls' ankles.
They do that there.
Ah, shut up. An embarrassed charter school in Utah has discovered it booked the wrong Jon Stewart for its annual gala, thinking the man was comedian Jon Stewart, star of The Daily Show. Last week, a local newspaper called Jon Stewart's publicist and found that the only place Stewart was scheduled to be that night was at Stephen Colbert's apartment, begging him to come back on the show and make it funny again. And that's the short order news for now. Colbert was funny. Dave Cross was on Colbert. Harlan Williams was not on Colbert. But, you know, Harlan Williams is here, and I'm going to introduce him formally in a moment. Betty Martini, the movie I saw her in, Sweet Misery, A Poisoned World. If you want to be frightened of diet soda, as you should be, and NutraSweet. Are you having a diet one? No, you're a real Coke drinker. Well, look, this is Harlan Williams, as I said before. I went to his website. I was impressed. It was like going to a video game. The man has everything. Children's books, music CDs, greeting cards, T-shirts. He's an online megastore, people. You've seen him in the movies Dumb and Dumber, Rocket Man, Half-Baked. He's here now. Harlan Williams.
How are you, buddy?
I'm all jacked up. I'm better than I was when we were in Ireland.
God, you're soaking in decaf, man.
I wish it were decaf. Clearly it's not. It's caffeine, and I'm absorbing it into my skin as we speak.
Oh, my God. You're all fired up like a three-hour log on a four-hour layover.
Yeah, exactly.
You see?
Yeah.
See how it works?
Now, let me ask you. When we were in Ireland, do you go international a lot to perform?
No.
You're not one of those guys?
Every now and then. I went to the Australian Melbourne Festival a few years ago.
How was that?
It was like Ireland, but the accent was on a 43-degree angle.
It went the other way?
Yeah. Right. Instead of shiver me timbers, it was g'day, mate.
G'day, mate.
Yeah.
No worries.
And what really sucked is I took, you knew I had a kid, right?
You did?
I had a baby, and when I went to this festival, I was at the Westin Hotel, and a dingo took my kid out of the room.
Yeah, that, I hear that's a problem.
Yeah,
what floor were you on? Because I heard they can only go up to like 13 floors.
I was on 13. Oh. Is that what it was? Oh, my God.
That's the bad luck for dingoes.
Oh, God. I'm so mad at myself.
Did you get the kid back?
No. I heard that someone sold it on eBay to Margaret Cho.
Oh, really? So, and now she's touring with it?
Yeah, she's got it.
She's opening with Dingo Boy and Margaret Cho. It used to be your job, didn't it? Weren't you Margaret Cho's dingo for a while?
Yeah, but I was sold, yes. Somebody stole me from the 13th floor.
Dingo Boy, he says.
Yeah.
I'm going to fly out of here on a pancake.
I love making Harlan Williams jokes. I do it a lot at home.
I'll be right behind you on a blueberry flapjack, my friend.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
I knew it. So what the hell, man? You're writing children's books and everything? I got to be honest with you. I was impressed.
Oh, thanks, man. Yeah, I've been writing and illustrating kids' books for years. I have a new one coming out in September.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
It's HarlanWilliams.com?
Yeah.
And do they sell? Do people buy your children's books?
Yeah, my publisher is Penguin, and they're in New York.
Oh, my God.
It's great.
You're like big time, man. It's weird because you know the game we're in with comics. If you don't see a guy for a year or so, you're like, oh, man, wonder what happened to him. And all of a sudden you go to their website, it's like, oh, my God, he owns the world.
Well,
who knew?
I'm like a stealth guy. I don't get out there and jump up and down. I just like to do my work, and if people dig it, they find it and
that's
enjoy
cool.
it. And if not, I don't care. I'm still going to...
Do you have a MySpace page?
Yeah, I started one like about 3 months ago. My buddy put it up for me. And,
now, who does? Okay, so you're gonna see. I got to do it. A lot of the listeners are like, "Where's the mic?" I got to get it. I do got to get it. Yeah. Is it helping you out?
Well, I just have it there to kind of promote my live stand-up shows.
Does it work?
Yeah. I mean, you know, Dane Cook.
That's what everybody says about this guy. It doesn't matter that he sucks, but it's just the fact that he's so good at promoting his crap that makes him impressive to us.
He doesn't suck. He's great. He's really good. I just finished shooting a movie with him.
All right. Well, I understand.
He's good. Have you seen him live?
Yeah. No. Oh, yes, I have. I've seen him live. Sure.
When?
I saw him live maybe a couple years ago. I think he bumped me at the comic strip. He bumped me over at the Laugh Factory.
But now he's kind of come into his own, and I'm telling you, he really does a good job. It's a good show.
No, I understand. Yeah. I understand. You hold the mic real close. You crouch down in sort of a Brian Regan style, and then you pace the stage again, and you talk about inane things in a really loud way, and chicks go wild.
No. Come on.
No, you're right. There's no reason. I'm player hating, and I do it too often.
He's good. I would if I didn't think so, I wouldn't sit here and BS. I would say.
What's the show you did with him?
We just finished shooting a movie called Employee of the Month with Jessica Simpson and him and Andy Dick.
There's a lot of Oscar buzz around that already, I heard.
There's a lot of Oscar the Grouch buzz all over my garbage can. You know Andy Dick, dude.
I know Andy Dick. He was supposed to be on the show a couple weeks ago. I think he might be coming in. I don't know.
You got to have Andy.
I heard, we ran into him, a friend of mine ran into him in New Orleans.
He's number one funny man.
Love Andy. Love him. I love him on the sauce or off the sauce.
Yeah,
on the powder
way.
Or off the powder. I'll take that guy any way he comes.
Oh, he's Wild Fingers McGillicuddy.
I'll say.
Oh, my God.
Look. So, what are you doing TV shows, too?
No, I'm not doing I'm the new Will and Gray. No, I'm not. Like, I can just do TV shows.
Can't you?
Well, you just can't walk into a studio. You got to audition.
Oh, see, I thought you could just do it. So what are we doing? We got to talk to a guy from Media Matters, Harlan.
Oh, my God.
And that's pretty highbrow stuff. So here's what I think we should do is you hang out. We'll do the interview with Paul Waldman from Media Matters, and then we'll come back to you in a little while. Do you want to hang out?
How long?
Do you got to go?
Well, I have to. Actually, speaking of TV, I have a meeting over at the Tonight Show.
All right,
I'm going to be on that in a few.
You're out.
Man.
You're done.
I didn't even get to tell you how much I love Bill O'Reilly, dude.
All right, Harlan Williams, folks. We'll be back with Paul Waldman.
He dropped Britney Spears' baby, Marc Maron.
Thank you. Before I bring Paul on, but Media Matters makes an impact. Listen to this. Listen to who he pisses off.
Every day the Radio Factor's on, there's this creepy little group.
Bill O'Reilly.
Who listens to our program and tapes it and then analyzes the tape. They're like the Rosemary's Baby people. Remember the scene of Rosemary's Baby where the devil was born to Rosemary, and they had the little people around the crib chanting. That's what these creepy left-wing nuts are like. They're little gnomes.
Yeah, well, he didn't quite have it right. Those weren't gnomes. They were just Satanists. But anyways, Media Matters are so thorough in their mission to reveal the bias and lies that the media enables that they are annoying in a good way. Every day I get at least a dozen dispatches from them with links to media bias. Paul Waldman is a senior fellow at Media Matters and the author of the new book, Being Right is Not Enough, What Progressives Must Learn from Conservative Success. He is with us now. How are you, Paul?
I'm doing great. And, you know, if Media Matters accomplishes nothing else, we are driving Bill O'Reilly insane, and that would be enough.
I think it's amazing because I know as an egocentric, narcissistic radio personality myself that in order for them to even register you, they've got to make a choice because they know that they're giving you guys press and that they're getting your message out there and that you guys are having an impact on them. And all of them, I think, when they finally do mention you, they just are boiling to the fact where they can't help themselves.
Yeah, and you know, I think for a long time, people like O'Reilly and Limbaugh and Sean Hannity got away with a lot because nobody was really listening. You know, they had their listeners in their world, and people in the broader world really didn't know what kind of stuff went on those sorts of shows. But That's what we do at Media Matters, and people can check it out at MediaMatters.org. Every day we listen, we watch these things, and when we hear outrageous statements, when we see false claims, we document them. And the audio and video is there, so there's no countering that.
It's an amazing resource. I mean, I've often wondered myself just how many people you have over there. I picture a room with 30 televisions and people pulling all-nighters, a lot of coffee. What do you got going over there?
It's something like that. We have an extraordinarily dedicated staff of researchers who every day do what very few people would be willing to do, which is they listen to Rush Limbaugh, they watch O'Reilly, and they write down whenever there's something that we need to take issue with. And they have a lot of knowledge, and we try to be very thorough, as you said. And, you know, we're not just out here saying, we don't agree with what O'Reilly's position on this or that issue is. We're sticking to the facts and what we can prove to be false. Frankly, some of the most popular things we do are just when we see some sort of outrageous clip and we put it up there for people to read. You know, we were the ones who exposed Pat Robertson saying that Hugo Chavez should be assassinated.
Right.
We were the ones who exposed Bill Bennett saying that you could reduce crime by aborting every black baby. And those things are, you know, it doesn't take a lot of time. We hear it and we say, oh, my God, people have to hear about that.
But we
put it up and then people notice and they say, this is what these conservative people are actually saying.
Right. And the great thing about the Media Matters side is you can cross-reference it. And you guys, you type the text of what's being said, and you show other times they have made statements that are lies. You are able to sort of prove over exposure on the media that they are lying and then what they are lying about, which I think is a tremendous service. My question to you is, and this is a question I've always had, is that it's clear to me that people like Rush and maybe Hannity are literally, they are right-wing operatives that are given dispatches or talking points. Now, is this true? Do they actually pick guys that they assume assigned to handle certain issues?
I don't know the details of how the different tasks are assigned, but there are certainly conservative organizations and places like the Republican National Committee that every day fax out talking points. I think also one of the things that's remarkable about the conservative movement, and this is something that I talk about in that book you referenced, is that everybody kind of does it almost organically. When a talking point begins to be uttered by Scott McClellan at the White House, everyone on the conservative side understands that's how we have to talk about this. That's how the language that we have to use. Those are the points we have to make. And
right.
They all sing from that same hymnal immediately, just spontaneously. It's terrifically coordinated.
Because they're all programmed to do that. They're all on the same page ideologically. But I guess my question was, it's sometimes, like Mick Ware talked to a radio talk show host, I can't remember who took him to task in trying to, when they were trying to bend the sort of liberal sympathizers to terrorists angle in terms of blaming the media for negative war coverage. And it seemed to me that I don't know if there's any way to figure that out, whether they assign certain people to go after certain people. I'd love to know that, wouldn't you?
It would be fascinating. I don't think many of them are going to talk. But,
yeah.
You know, one of the things that they do really well is when they have a point they want to make, everybody makes it.
Yeah, well, let's talk about immigration. Now, how do you see them framing immigration across the board?
Well, this is something that you know, they're not really all that necessarily as coordinated as they sometimes are.
There's a schism, right?
There's a lot of nervousness.
Yeah.
I think, you know, you're in California. People see the analogy to Prop 187, which gave some short-term benefits to the Republicans and then ended up destroying the Republican Party in California. And there's a lot of nervousness that that's going to happen, too. So what you see on the conservative side now is some of the more kind of extreme voices really getting out there and saying, you know, round them all up, send them home, and then you have people like even the president who wants a guest worker program of some sort. There's an unusual amount of dissension, actually, on the Republican side, much more so than usual. Usually they're united, they're all singing the same song. But this time they can't seem to get their act together because there are some real differences within their party, and it really threatens to break them up.
Well, I think, isn't it also because George Bush has become ineffective and lame duckish to the point where he's almost, it seems like the right wing or the Republican Party is enabling candidates in certain regions to detach themselves from the president?
Right. There are very few Republican candidates who want George Bush to come campaign
right.
for them. He's kind of reached that tipping point with them where he's so unpopular. He's even losing support among Republicans. And that has a whole bunch of ramifications. It means they're not going to be using their talking points from the White House as much. It means that they're going to be willing to vote against him on bills, and they're going to be willing to oppose him on these kinds of broad issues. Because for a politician, if you're, say, a member of Congress, there's one principle that stands above all others, and that is that you have to get reelected. reelected. And right now, being too close to George Bush in most places in the country is going to be a threat to your reelection.
Now, let me ask you something that I have always assumed about the way the Republicans work and the way the talking points come out of Karl Rove's office or the RNC or wherever. It seems to me that if an issue is hot enough, if it is a smoking gun, that what they will do is they'll actually shotgun a lot of confusing talkers, like, you know, people who are contradicting themselves and confusing the issue, like with the leak and the evolution of the Planegate situation. It seems that they are almost encouraging confusion.
Well, you know, sometimes these issues are pretty complicated, and they can get confusing quickly. But I think one of the principles that they've held to is that if you have a point to make and you make it over and over and over again, no matter how ridiculous or absurd or nonsensical it is, you can eventually get to move the ball down the field to where you want to go. And if nothing else, you can sort of confuse the issue to muddy the waters. Is Saddam Hussein a member of Al-Qaeda? Was Osama bin Laden a part of the Iraqi government? You can sort of muddy the waters enough, and sometimes it's just all it takes is saying those two sorts of different ideas in the same sentence over and over and over again, and then, you know, lo and behold, after a few months of that, people think that that Saddam Hussein ordered 9/11.
Right.
It's a very effective means of persuading people. Just by kind of putting different ideas together, even if it doesn't really make sense, if you can just repeat it over and over and over again, first the people on your side will get it, and then some other people in the middle will get it, and then before you know it, nobody knows what the hell is going on.
Yeah, I think it's called hypnosis. The repetition of the same thing over. But what happens is once the frame is set, even if it's proven to be false, that stays in the mind of those people who decide to commit to it. Now, let me get into this other thing, which is, what about, I don't think, obviously there is no left-wing media, but it seems to me that this is along the same lines we were talking about before. There is certainly right-wing media outlets, and then I think there are irresponsible, lazy journalists, because some of the people that you guys show as putting forth at least some version of right-wing talking points, I don't even think they're smart enough to know what they're doing. It seems to me that they're ciphers and they just go along.
Yeah, we monitor the mainstream media as well. And
yeah.
One of the things that we find is that very often they will repeat Republican talking points without seeing whether or not they have any basis in fact.
Right.
You know, we don't have any kind of grand conspiracy theory about conservative bias. We're not saying that reporters have a sinister agenda that they're trying to get across. But through a combination of factors, you know, we can't read people's minds, but sometimes it may be laziness, sometimes it may just be thoughtlessness, sometimes it may be time pressures. What you find is over and over again, that kind of Republican spin ends up finding its way into news stories. And so one of the things that we feel is important to do is to keep the press under pressure. And we don't want to do it in a mean way, but if they get something wrong, we're going to point it out and tell them. And we're going to keep doing it until they get it right. And what we find oftentimes is that reporters will say something, you know, repeat some piece of spin without challenging the fact that it's untrue, without even really thinking about
it.
But if we point it out, and then they may correct it the next time again. And it doesn't mean that they're necessarily trying to advance the Republican Party line, but that's what happens in effect.
Right.
So it's important to keep them under that kind of pressure.
So out of their irresponsibility, what happens is the Republican line gets moved forward, and if that frame is set, they're reaffirming that frame just because they're irresponsible reporters.
Yeah, there it's certainly true that there are lots of different kinds of biases. You know, the ideological bias may be the least important kind. Reporters are slaves to the conventional wisdom, and sometimes that comes out in ways that are very bad for Democrats, regardless of whether a reporter is, you know, personally pro-choice or anything like that. There's a kind of contempt for Democrats that comes through in so much of reporting that, you know, they can't get their act together, that they're just a bunch of wimps. And, you know, even if those things have some basis in truth, you find them, even at a time like it is right now, where everything is going wrong for the Republican Party.
Thank goodness.
And it really seems like Democrats are going to make serious gains and they have their act together more than they've had in a long time. You still see lots and lots of stories about how the Democrats are divided and they can't do anything right. No matter how bad things go for Republicans, the press always seems to find a silver lining for them.
Well, also some of that has to do with selling news, and it's just a frame that they've gotten used to, and I thank God you guys are out there to correct it. I want to talk about the book. I want to talk about, because you say there are some, you say you got sort of a plan to get progressives on the same page. I'd like you to stay on the phone with me a few minutes while we take a break and talk about that in a minute, will you? Okay, Paul, so we'll be back with Paul Waldman in just a second to get the plan of how we can all get on the same page. Will you get on the same page with me, Jim?
Absolutely.
Okay, great. Stay with us.
Now he's divided and can't do anything right. Mark Maron.
Thank you, Jim. Our guest on the phone is Paul Waldman. He is a senior fellow at Media Matters. Very important. If you go to MediaMatters.org, get on their mailing list, and you will be overly informed to the point of like, oh, my God, how do we get out from under this this tidal wave of media bias? But it's very important. It's one of the best websites out there for progressive information, just information, truthful information. I don't want to label it. I mean, it would help anybody, conservative or not. But he's got a book coming out, Being Right is Not Enough, What Progressives Must Learn from Conservative Success. Apparently in the book, you talk about how the conservatives have their four pillars. They've got their low taxes, small government, strong defense, traditional family values. And then you talk about how progressives need a thematically unified master narrative. Is it possible to harness us all under a master narrative, Paul Waldman?
I think it is. And what conservatives have understood is that politics isn't really about issues, per se.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Democrats always think, oh, well, if I just come up with a better 10-point plan, then I can win this next election.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Democrats don't need any more 10-point plans. What they need is to understand how politics is about identity. It's about who you are. And conservatives have always understood that. So, you know, when I was starting to write this book, I asked every liberal friend I could find, you know, what is it that Democrats believe in? What is it the progressives believe in? Because I think that there are some unifying themes. And what I found out is that people gave a lot of different answers, but it kept coming back to this idea of that we're all in it together. That
okay.
Conservatives basically believe that we're all out for ourselves and we're all on our own. And progressives believe that we're all in it together. And what comes out of that are any policy issue you can think of and some basic principles like security and opportunity and freedom. But that's the basic idea that unites progressives, I think. And so we have to start to communicate to the public, not in terms of the 10-point plans, but about what we believe at our core. And that's one of the things that the conservatives have been very good at. I mean, if you ask any conservative, from the President of the United States all the way down to just like a guy who listens to Rush Limbaugh drive in his cab, what a conservative stand for, he's going to be able to tell you. He'll say, you know, low government, you know, small government, low taxes, but strong defense, traditional values. But here's the thing. If you ask him what a liberal stands for, what is he going to tell you? He's going to give you the conservative caricature of liberals.
Yeah,
he's going to say, oh, they stand for big government and high taxes, right? And
Not only is it not true, but my concern in what you're saying, because I've psychoanalyzed myself and progressives a lot, is that it seems to me that conservatives are shamelessly selfish, like you said. And it seems to me that a lot of times progressives are selfish, but they don't want to acknowledge it, so they sort of somehow mutate it into selflessness. But that becomes a competitive selflessness. And I just see that given that we have a big umbrella, which we should, and tolerance is important, that these values, that you really have to reach out and grab some of the hearts of progressives in order to make them realize that they might be being self-righteous, and they need to get on the same page.
Well, sure. You know, that's another thing that the conservatives have done very well. They're willing to sort of put their immediate parochial concerns aside for the larger cause of conservatism. They talk about and think about conservatism and how to fight liberalism. We don't really think about fighting conservatism. I mean, if you go to the bookstore, look at the political section of the bookstore, what you're going to find are all these books by conservatives about how liberals are destroying America. Right, that's the subtitle to almost any book that comes out from, you know, Renouree Publishing, Why Liberals Are Destroying America. But you don't find books by liberals about why conservatives are destroying America, because we don't see ourselves as part of an ideological fight with an enemy. And that's how we have to start thinking about it, that conservatism is our enemy, and if we want to create the kind of country that we want to see, we're going to have to fight that enemy.
It's interesting that you bring that up, because a blogger, or one of our people, our regular listeners, actually knew you were coming on the show and actually wrote a question that ask why all those books are there. He wanted to know what's going on in the book publishing distributing business that encourages bookstore managers to prominently feature books written by or for the right-wing community, and you're saying it's because there isn't a lot coming out from the other side.
Right. Well, they write them, and they have a few. There's a couple of publishers that specifically just do conservative books, and then there are big publishing companies that have divisions that just do conservative books. And the liberal publishers tend to be pretty small.
Right.
But they also, you know, they have a whole apparatus of promotion. If you write a conservative book, no matter how terrible it is. I mean, if you pick up some of those, you think they're written by fourth graders. But you're immediately going to get on, you know, every episode of Hannity and Combs for a week. And Rush Limbaugh is going to plug your book. And Bill O'Reilly is going to plug your book. And conservative nonprofit groups are going to buy thousands of copies. And all of a sudden, you know, you get these utter hacks who become best-selling authors.
Well, the reason that is a lot of Republicans have the sort of mental and emotional disposition of a fourth grader. My buddy Jim here has got a question for you. What do you got, Jim?
Well, yeah, along the same line there, you're talking about the progressive side doesn't have a brand. It is nothing to brand them like the Republicans do. And isn't that because that the conservatives are more apt to believe in dogma?
Well, you know, this is a good question. There's a belief, I think, among liberals that conservatism is inherently easy to be simplified. You know, you can put it on a bumper sticker, and liberalism is much more complicated. And I don't think that's necessarily true. I think there are a lot of progressive values that can fit on a bumper sticker, but we just haven't spent enough time thinking about how to get them down. You know, there's nothing inherently wrong with being simple. There's a difference between simple and simplistic. And, you know, there are lots of simple ideas. You know, ask not what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country. That's a simple idea. It's a sound bite, right? There's nothing wrong with sound bites. We just have to spend some time thinking about how to take our values and the things that we believe in and to simplify them and present them to the public. Because, you know, the public doesn't read position papers. They don't read 10-point plans. They're not going to make their evaluations of candidates and of ideologies that way. They're gonna think about the simple things, what they pick up, what you can repeat over and over. And you can, if you spend enough time thinking about it, get what you believe down into those simple things.
Well, I agree with you. So we need to hire some pretty, you know, top-notch ad guys that aren't conservatives. We need to find some people that can start framing this stuff in those sound bites. And I think one of the reasons that I've always said the conservatives are successful at it is it's easier to find those when you have a narrow point of view. I believe that they are very narrow-minded and they're defensive. And they are into a sort of, you know, tough love kind of bullying mode. And it's a lot easier to think of sound bites when it's just like, we're going to kick your ass.
That's true. And it's also true that they got better at politics because they had no choice.
All right.
If you look at public opinion and what the issue agendas of the two parties, on almost every issue, the Democratic position is more popular.
Well,
people want a higher minimum wage. People want strong environmental protections. All these people want national health care, all these things. So the Republicans had no choice but to become really, really good at politics. And
well,
Democrats,
on
the other hand, thought that they could get away with just talking about the issues, but it's not working.
Well, we're gonna get good at it with your help, Paul Waldman. Thanks so much for being with us.
It's been my pleasure.
I appreciate it. So we'll be back in a second. We're going to talk to Betty Martini about the horrible poison that is aspartame. We got Lawton Smalls in a little while. Stay with us.
Now he's a senior fellow at the Institute of Senior Fellows.
Hey, that was
Mark Maron.
Well, that was funny twice, even though the people that are listening now didn't hear it the first time.
Oh, you're breaking the fourth wall again, man.
I want to let people in on the process, Jim.
The process, don't say
Harry Reid, man. Senator Harry Reid, Democratic minority leader there in the Senate, grew some over the past couple days and stood up to President Bush yesterday on the immigration issue, which I thought was just amazing. If I could quote Harry Reid, quote, President Bush has as much credibility on immigration as he does on Iraq and national security, end quote. The fact that a Democratic senator could say that with any confidence and actually deliver that point is just phenomenal. Phenomenal. And we'll talk about why in the context he said that in just a second. Now, as you know, Jim, I stopped eating aspartame a few weeks ago, and I've stopped before, but not unlike many people. I'm sort of a health nut, but then it eventually lapses. You know, eventually I'm like, you know, how bad could it be? But after I saw this movie, Sweet Misery, A Poisoned World, and I heard about and saw Betty Martini, who's in the film, talk about it. Betty Martini is the founder of Mission Possible International. It's a worldwide volunteer force committed to removing aspartame from our food because Betty, like many others, believes that the FDA has anything but our interests in mind. Aspartame is poison, and the FDA has compiled 92 symptoms that are a result from aspartame, including death, yet it is still on the market, folks. The founder of Mission Possible International, Betty Martini, is on the phone with us now. Thank you for joining us, Betty.
Thank you, Mark. So happy to be on your show.
I'm so glad you're here because I tell you, I don't think I'm unlike many other people who, you know, we stop drinking the Diet Coke for a little while because we hear it's bad, but eventually you're like, you guys Diet Coke, all right, I'll take it. And you don't really know what we're getting into until I saw you talk in this film that I watched. And now this aspartame thing, it really is poison.
Oh, it's a literal poison. In fact, so much so that it's a chemical hypersensitization agent. So it not only interacts with all drugs and vaccines, but it interacts with other toxins and other bad sweeteners, for instance, like Splenda. They've just asked to have it recalled, too. It's a chlorocarbon poison.
Oh, wait a minute. Now back up, Betty. Now, I can't. The Splenda's bad, too?
Oh, yes. We call it DDT light. It liberates free chlorine.
What does that mean?
Well, that means they took some hydroxyls, you know, of sugar, and they interchanged them for chlorine. And interestingly, the other day, we had a call from Marianne Lamar, whose husband had just got over an aspartame brain tumor, and he says, okay, I'm going to use Splenda, and immediately had a grand mal seizure. So Marianne calls McNeil, and she just is not going to take no for an answer. You know, I know something's wrong with this. And finally they admit, well, yes, it does cause seizures, and it does cause migraines. So it shouldn't be approved. You know that.
I got to throw away my Pepsi one. Hold on. I am an idiot. So what? Now,
stay away from chemicals.
Period. Just all chemicals. It's no easy task. But I just want the people to understand something about aspartame. And now you're telling me Splenda is that. They present this stuff. First of all, the history of aspartame is they know, the FDA knows, and the manufacturers, it's Searle still pharmaceutical, they know that this is poison. And it was pushed through by Donald Rumsfeld in the 80s, correct, when he was the CEO of Searle, in order to save their business model without any concern for the people. But what you're saying now is that this stuff categorically, medically proven, causes symptoms not unlike lupus, not unlike MS, and now you're saying brain tumors as well.
Well, yes, there's a medical text on it that's as big as our Atlanta phone directory, Aspartame Disease and Ignored Epidemic, which goes through all the neurodegenerative diseases it causes, all the tumors.
Why is it still on the market?
Well, it's still on. Well, you know, let's back up a
okay,
little bit.
Okay, let's do it.
You know, the FDA, I call them the fatal drugs allowed folks, will just about approve anything. However, you know, they did not want to approve aspartame, and they wanted them indicted for fraud. But both U.S. prosecutors hired on with the defense team, and the statute of limitations expired. So then, you know, here comes Rumsfeld as CEO and says, I'll call in my markers and get it approved anyway, even when the FDA said no. And so what happened was that he was on Reagan's transition team, and the day after Reagan took office, he appointed an FDA commissioner that would approve it, even though the FDA had said no. But he was afraid that it would take 30 days to get him there. And can you just imagine a president writing an executive order making the FDA commissioner powerless until he gets somebody there? And then he overruled the Board of Inquiry report that had revoked the petition for approval and went to work for the PR agency of the manufacturer.
Wow.
So all these years, everybody's been trying to get it off the market.
Because it's poison.
Yes, the Community Nutrition Institute, for instance, in 1986, petitioned the FDA to ban it because it caused so much blindness and so many seizures, and they just said no, they were not going to do it. When I filed a petition 4 years ago, they wrote me a note and said they were too busy and they had better and more important things to do.
Is there any chance that Donald Rumsfeld is Satan? Is there any chance?
Well, I'll tell you one thing. If you get on Google, you can look up Rumsfeld disease because that's what they've named it is so deadly.
What, the aspartame illness? Now, the products that contain aspartame, two questions I have. Before we finish our conversation, this is a toxin to everyone. My rationalization after I watched the film, I'm like, well, clearly some people are sensitive to it, some people aren't. But the bottom line is it turns into to methyl alcohol, to wood alcohol when it enters anyone's system. Correct?
That's right. And then to formaldehyde and formic acid and sting poison, And then it embalms you, as the Croco study shows. But, you know, think about this. If I told you, don't drink this because it's got arsenic in it or cyanide, you would say, okay, that's poison. But everything in aspartame is poison. The Dr. Oney did the studies on aspartic acid as an isolate is an excitotoxin.
Uh-huh.
You know, it stimulates the neurons
sure.
of the brain to death. Then you've got methyl alcohol, which is a neurotoxin, and then you've got phenylalanine as an isolate, which floods the brain and depletes serotonin,
wow.
causing psychiatric and behavioral problems, as a neurotoxin, and then it breaks down to diketokiparazine, a brain tumor agent.
Oh, my God.
And then, you know, it's like Dr. Blaylock says in a lecture, he says, understand, these reactions are not allergic. They are toxic, like arsenic and cyanide.
So
we're talking about everything in aspartame is poison.
So it's not a sensitivity. It's not an allergy. It's literally a poisoning. I'll tell you, this is a thing that I think a lot of Americans have to keep in mind, is that what this is a testament to is the insane power of government cronyism with corporations and just the power of marketing. I mean, this information is out there. You're doing everything you can to get it out there. I'm doing it with you right now. But yet the label of Coca-Cola somehow or another erases people's ability to see the truth about this stuff.
Well, Mark, did you get the press release I sent you?
I did. That's about the study.
Okay, now here's, you want to know why it's still on the market.
Well, okay.
Okay, well, here, let me answer it this way. First of all, we've got all the proof. I mean, if we don't know what aspartame causes in a quarter of a century, we're pretty bad.
Mm-hmm.
And so here's a medical text. It gives the mechanism of causing everything. And,
where can people see this online? Because I want to send people. We don't have a lot more time to talk, but I want to send people to your website. I've got a link to it on my site. Can you tell us what it is right now?
www.wnho.net and www.doorway.com.
And all the information that you're telling me is on that site. And I think that one of the only ways that we can get the message out and for people to make a difference here is just to stop buying the damn stuff.
Exactly.
Number one.
And they have stooped as low as they can go now after an impeccable study shows it to be a multi-potential carcinogen.
Uh-huh.
And the Delaney Amendment says that if it causes cancer in animals, you can't put it in food. They've recently taken 10 years ago a little food form that only mentions aspartame once.
Wow.
and touted it all over the world as an aspartame cancer study.
Wow.
That's how bad that they will go to fight the removal of aspartame.
The fix is in. It's like the damn tobacco companies. Well, look, Betty, I really appreciate you being with us and sharing this information. We'll send people the website, and thank you for what you're doing.
Thank you, Mark.
Okay, take care, Betty Martini. You see that? My dad is right. My dad he's been telling me about this for a long time. You got to use stevia. You got to use something that
stevia.
Isn't a chemical.
Well, how do you know what is what? You know?
Go to her website, doorway.net. And see, it's
and
chemical.
This is in Diet Pepsi and Diet Coke.
Well, Splenda's. I thought I was getting away with something with the Pepsi one.
Splenda, yeah. That's
we'll be right back. You know, are we going to, you know, here's an advertisement. We do sponsor some things.
Hi, I'm Jim Earle. You may know me as a master spelunker, world-class fencer, and enthusiastic tab drinker. But did you know I'm also an avid scrapbooker? I'm here to tell you scrapbooking isn't just for angry women aged 45 to 47 anymore. That's right. Whether you're a terrorist, serial killer, or somebody who just gets off on fire, you know how hard it can be to preserve your precious keepsakes so the whole world can really know how much you really hate them. That's why you should let the kind people at your local scrapbooking boutique take those grisly mementos and arrange them in an elaborately designed montage tucked inside an archival, acid-free scrapbook. You'll see how exotic textured paper, felt stickers, and glue-on sequins can keep those exciting memories alive for your horrified family, long after authorities find your half-charred body in a Motel 6. Take it from me. Just because your victims are a gory mess doesn't mean your keepsakes have to be. Scrapbooking.
how long until he has the ability to make bombs? Mark Maron.
I think I already do. I don't know. Or maybe the guy who's working on my house can. The guy Ernie.
Is he still working on your gate?
That's another guy. He didn't. The guy who's working on my gate can't work on it today because he had some family stuff to go. But it's partially up. It looks pretty good. You're coming over on Sunday, right? You and Bill are going to come over. We're going to eat.
Yeah, possibly.
Sweetie Bill
yeah.
Kolar and little Jimmy Earl are going to come over with the ladies and have some veggie burgers. Look, I do want to say something. I would be remiss, is it, if I didn't? Because someone turned me on to this fella. This man, this great man, fella, William Sloan Coffin, died yesterday at the age of 81. He was the chaplain at Yale University from 1958 to 1975. But more importantly, he was this is an interesting guy. He was born into privilege, into a very rich family, into a very connected family. He knew George H.W. Bush. He was in the CIA before he became a chaplain and a man of the cloth, so to speak. But he got out of the CIA because it was obviously disillusioning. And after he went to divinity school and became a chaplain, because of his experience in the CIA, he was hip to what the French were doing in Vietnam and what later America began to do in Vietnam. And he was in very early opposition to the Vietnam War and became famous for his anti-war activities and his civil rights activism. He was part of the Freedom Rides. He challenged segregation. He was against, obviously, the oppression of black people before that was popular. And when he was at Yale in the early 60s, he organized the Freedom Riders to change the segregation laws in the South. And he opened his pulpit to Martin Luther King, to Desmond Tutu, Nelson Mandela. This guy was like a deep guy, and he used religion in the right way. And before he died, this was just a couple years ago. I pulled this off the Religion and Ethics Newsweekly. This is an interview from 2004 when he was 80 years old. And in this first cut, he's talking about poverty.
It's clear to me that almost every square inch of the Earth's surface is soaked with the tears and blood of the innocent. It's not God's doing. It's our doing. That's human malpractice. Don't chalk it up to God. Every time people say, when they see the innocent suffering, every time they lift their eyes to heaven and say, God, how could you let it happen? It's well to remember that exactly that moment, God is asking exactly that same question of us. How could you let it happen? So you have to take responsibility. If you back off from every little controversy in your life, you're not alive. And what's more, you're boring.
That's an 80-year-old William Sloan Coffin after a couple of strokes. He was. They told him he was going to die a couple of years ago, and he lived on, and he was still obviously fairly lucid towards the end. But this is a man of religion,
mm-hmm.
who was able to sort of meet that midway point and not pollute his message of civil disobedience, of speaking up for the oppressed, of reaching out to all people in a way that he would call Christian or his interpretation of it. This is another quote. This applies to both conservatives of all people in relation to self-righteousness, Jim. Second
self-righteousness one. Destroys our capacity for self-criticism.
Mm-hmm.
It makes it very hard to be humble, and it destroys the sense of oneness all human beings should have, one with another.
See, that's self-righteousness.
So what are you pointing at me?
I don't know. I'm just saying. I'm just sharing the message of a religious man who passed away.
Great, great man, in spite of the religion.
Let's have one more.
But there is a irremediable stubbornness about evil. We have to recognize it, including our own complicity in it. We have to constrain it, but I doubt we'll ever eradicate it. To say, grant us peace, in a time, O Lord, God must say, come off that. What are you going to do for peace, for heaven's sake? not enough to pray for it. You have to think for it. You have to suffer for it. And you have to endure a lot for it. So don't just pray about it.
That was William Sloan Coffin. He is dead at the age of 81. Also very prominent in the anti-nuclear activism. He's one of the founders of some modern anti-nuclear movements. He'll be missed because he was a spiritual guy, a man of religion that actually was doing the right thing. Is that all right, Jim?
Of course.
All right, we're going to come back. I think we're going to get Lawton on the phone, so hang out.
He prays daily to Lothar, god of peanut butter, Mark Maron.
How do you know that, man? I got this compulsive peanut butter thing going on that I can't really live with. I really just can't.
Are you sure it doesn't contain aspartame?
I'm
saccharin.
I gotta let go of this stuff, man. I am self-obsessed, and it's stupid. It's just stupid. Why can't I just get fat and not worry about it? Why can't I?
Do you tend to get fat?
I think so. I mean, if I eat, because if I had the choice, now that I'm not doing anything else, not even having a cigar or nothing, or just have to. I just was going at peanut butter last night. It's almost like I'm peanut buttering my way to the gym. Like I'm trying to get the level of self-contempt to such a point that it will fuel me to exercise. And I get tired of talking about this, and I'm sure people get tired of hearing
about
it.
Why do you have self-contempt?
Why?
Yeah. Tell me about it.
Well,
how do you feel about yourself?
I'm a little hard on myself.
Sorry, time's up.
I got. Thanks, man. Thanks for your concern.
All
and
right.
By the way, I apologize for saying shut up earlier. Okay.
I don't remember that.
Shut up. Since our no, it was rude, and it's all right. You don't remember it at all.
No. Huh?
You see, I think that I say bad things about you, and that it has some effect on you. But I realize you were so self-involved that you don't even register them.
No. I usually catch each and every one of them. I didn't catch that one. Thanks for now. I got. Let me write that one down.
Put that on the list of things that I've said that have offended you. Okay, check that off. Hey, I think we got, let's get Lawton on the phone. Since our president is openly operating in a different reality, we think it's important that listeners know what's going on in his alternate universe. Luckily, we have a staffer who lives in that world. So here now is our very own Planet Bush Bureau Chief, Lawton Smalls. Hello, Lawton.
Hello, Mark. God made spring pollen. Don't sneeze him out.
Okay, all right. Well,
that's holy.
I know. Listen, Seymour Hersh's article in The New Yorker about Bush totally just called him out on these totally wacko plans for Iran. That this time your boy is really cooked. I'm telling you, cooked.
Stop that. That was nothing but wild speculation, Mark. That on-demand abortionist Osama bin Hersh has only got one anonymous source for that story, Mark. One. And that source is about as reliable as one of your cats. Why, he'd give away secrets for a handful of little friskies. You lib floppers will believe anything if it's in the New Yorker. And the cartoons aren't even funny, Mark. Not funny at all.
Listen to me, Lawton. You can't spin this one, buddy. You can't spin it. Hersh is the most respected journalist in the business, buddy. I'll bet every word he wrote in that story is true, isn't it? Isn't it, buddy? Every word. You know it, Lawton.
Yeah, okay, Mark. So the article's true. You win, you spoiled baby. So what? What's your point?
What's my point? It's okay with you that Bush wants to drop nuclear bombs on Iran?
Okay, it's fantastic. Hey, let's finally drag this thing out on the table, okay? I'm tired of America sneaking around like a bunch of liberal surrender monkeys. We are going to nuke Iran. There, I said it out loud, and it feels good. Like I just won the Daytona 500 and a dinner date with Ann Coulter. We're doing it. It's happening.
It feels good. What are you out of your mind, Lawton?
Hey, I wanted Jimmy Carter to drop the big one on Iran in 1979 on account of the hostages and all. But, of course, that socialist peanut head was too busy trying to get America to conserve energy and wear a sweater in the winter and defeatist crap like that. One good ICBM would have shut up that Ayatollah Ayahola. I promise you that.
Well, whoa. But nuclear weapons, Lawton. Come on. It's immoral. It's unethical.
Yes.
It's just dumb, Lawton.
All right. Here's a question, hotshot. Why do we have nukes in the first place, huh? Decoration? Because they look nice around the house? Are we collecting them like commemorative plates?
All right. Make your point.
We have nukes to use them, Mark. Those Iranian devils are down there on their knees 3 times a day praying to Allah to give them nukes. And why? So they can drop them on us. There goes your little chai decaf latte party right there, Mr. PBS subscriber. President George W., two terms mandate Bush, knows this, and he knows that if we drop them nuclears before they do, game over, terrorists. Tell your tin pot god there's a new sheriff in town. Bye-bye.
Hey, look,
Martin,
we cannot do that, and you know it, man.
Oh, sure. You baby killers would just let our missiles rust in the silos. Then you'd probably say, hey, let's turn this old silo into a community center for gay modern dancers. Y'all might as well paint a sign on your forehead that says, Dear Iran, stick a fork here. I'm done.
You know what, Lawton?
Done.
You know what it sounds like to me, my friend?
What?
Bush's second term is going down the toilet. He sees the midterm elections coming, and he's afraid he's going to get impeached next year. So now he's like, what the hell? I'll do whatever I want. This isn't strength. It's desperation, Lawton. Anyone who says we should use nuclear weapons is obviously cracking up, and you know that, little man.
Mark?
Yeah, what?
When I was growing up, my daddy made me do air raid drills, you know, to protect myself from the Soviet nuclear missiles.
Yeah.
He'd yell, air raid, dummy! Communist nukes incoming!
All right,
And I'd run and hide in the dark closet, crouch down with my little hands over my little head.
Yeah.
And then daddy would lock the door. I was in there and I could hear laughing and Jack Daniels bottles clinking and Hank Williams music playing.
Oh, boy.
And I'd overhear him saying, well, that little bastard's out of the way.
Oh, man. Okay.
Yeah. You know, once he left me in there in the dark for 6 days, I didn't have no place to poop.
Oh, boy. I can't even.
When daddy finally opened the door, he'd say, well, dummy, I guess the Russians didn't get us this time.
Oh, boy. All right, look, Lawton, please, just will you pull it together, please? All right, it always ends up in such a weird place with you, man. I don't even know what the hell to say.
I don't want to go through that again, Mark.
All right, okay.
No more nukes.
Okay, good.
No nukes.
Okay, I'm good, good, good. No more nukes. That's
no
good.
Nukes.
Pull it together now, please, so we can... Oh, boy. Yeah. Okay. Man.
Oh, pollen. Whew. Oh, it's high noon, Mark. We got to pull that old missile out of the holster before Muhammad does. Bam! Too slow!
All right,
gotcha.
Lawton. Okay, goodbye,
gotcha.
Lawton. Goodbye.
God loves you, Mark. Deal with it!
Wow, he was on fire today.
Pollen.
He was on fire today. I'll tell you, man. Yeah, it sounds like he's getting into some Mortensen territory with the pollen.
Yeah, what the hell?
All of a sudden, it's allergies with old Lawton. A
lot of allergies going around.
I guess. I'll tell you, did you watch South Park last night?
No, I'm not a... Okay, look, man. You know,
you of all
shoot
people.
Me. I'm not a fan of South Park. And they say over the years, it got a lot better than the first, year or so. But the first year or so were just so grating and over the top and
ham-fisted. But they've chosen to not... It's not so much that they get political, but they push the envelope. And apparently Comedy Central forbid them to put a image of Muhammad in an episode. Okay, because they were going to obviously comment and push the envelope like they do sometimes with not just First Amendment things, but with what people will tolerate in terms of their own morality. And they were stifled about the Scientology
really?
Thing.
Yeah.
But they were going to use Muhammad, and apparently Comedy Central said no. You can't. We can't do that. It'll be too provocative. It will cause trouble. I don't want anybody to get hurt. So they built 2 episodes around the fact that they weren't able to use a depiction of Muhammad because Comedy Central thought it would be too provocative and somebody might get hurt.
Man.
And so they made it basically a First Amendment issue. And the 2 episodes revolved around Family Guy, which they tore an ass. They completely made Family Guy look like a bunch of morons.
They don't like Family Guy?
No, they don't like Family
I'm
Guy.
I'm not a big fan of Family Guy.
I'm not either, actually. You know, Brendan P.W. McDonald and Dan Pashman, yeah. Son of Lewis and Linda Pashman from the old days, big fans of Family Guy, but they kind of call Family Guy out as being just a venue for to do ridiculous jokes over and over again that have no bearing on anything. So they make Family Guy the culprit in this two-part episodes of South Park of them wanting to put Muhammad in. And there's in this the one last night that was just hilarious. They use actual footage of Al-Zawahiri, the Al-Qaeda the leader, mm-hmm. and also of Osama bin Laden. They use film footage of them saying like Family Guy sucks. I don't like Family Guy. Like translating it with subtitles. But then after they are taken to task by Comedy Central and not allowed to use Muhammad, at the end they used the device of having Al-Qaeda produce a response to Family Guy using Muhammad in their show, which was censored out of mm-hmm. the South Park episode. And they had this big finale of basically Americans pooping on each other, and then the president coming out and pooping on Americans, and then Jesus coming out and pooping, and everyone's just pooping on each other, and it's this big finale of crassness that I found to be very effective. And of course, someone from the Catholic League, this guy William Donahue, called on Trey Parker and Matt Stone to resign out of principle for being censored. See how these religious nut jobs do this?
For being censored?
Right. What yeah. he's saying is, if you guys really stand for what you talk about, if you guys are really fighting the fight, you should quit because Comedy Central censored you. And then he says, quote, this is quoting William Donahue. He says, quote, like little whores, they'll sit there and grab the bucks. They'll sit there and they'll whine and they'll take their shot at Jesus. That's their stock and trade, end quote. And all that Matt Stone and Trey Parker were trying to do was get the freedom to take a big dump on everybody. That was the whole issue, and it's odd to me that out of all religions, that Comedy Central stifles Scientology and the Muhammad thing, which I understand on some level that they might be frightened, but it still is what it is. You should be able to take a shot at everybody just to see what happens. Don't you think so?
Absolutely. I mean, okay, this you know they're turning into the Smothers Brothers, maybe. You know?
Well, they're pushing the envelope. I don't know how many people are taking notice or what effect it's really having, but you watch it, and when I was watching it today, I watched the TiVo'd when they had Osama bin Laden and Al-Zawahiri subtitled. I blew a lid, man. I thought it was hilarious.
I'll have to check that out.
Blew a gasket, just because you just don't see it. It's very provocative. It's like, yeah, thank God somebody is minimizing those guys comedically. They are literally...
No, you know, Jay Leno had the dancing bin Ladens.
Well, I guess that's true.
Man.
I guess
okay,
that's true.
Okay, you're right. That's wrong.
No. It's not a matter that it's wrong. It's just that in terms of what they're fighting for the power of humor to take the task everybody and reveal the hypocrisy and everything, those are one of the few guys, Trey and Parker and Stone are some of the few guys that are actually doing it effectively because they're not partisans per se, but they rally against hypocrisy and they use crass methods to do so, and I think it's great. That's my take on it, my friend.
Poop is probably the most important weapon mankind has.
I believe that's true. I believe that poop is the most important weapon that mankind has. My cat has that weapon as well and uses it very effectively. I want to talk about Harry Reid a little bit, and then we'll do the short order news and blah de blah de blah, right?
Stay tuned for 3 minutes of crap. That's right, Mark Maron's short order news is coming up next.
I
like that.
Really?
That.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mark Maron.
Thank you, man. That's great, man.
I was going to make some comment about you hiding your colored eggs for children.
Oh, hey, parents, Jewish parents, watch out for alcoholism. All right? This is where it starts. Starts on Passover. I'm just putting that out to you. All right? Put that in your head.
And what a better time for it to start.
The permissive parent model, the liberal parent model, not always the best idea. That's all I'm saying. Don't leave it up to your kids. Sometimes they need to be told what to do. That's a weird thing about me, Jim, and I'll share that with you. I'm not ashamed to share it with you.
That you got drunk in Passover when you were seven?
That's, of course. Are you kidding? I got drunk. I took the car, went to see Deep Purple because, of, you know why I'm saying that?
Deep Purple. Why is that?
Ian Gilliam. What? From the original Deep Purple. He's going to be on the show tomorrow. Deep Purple.
Oh.
Yeah. No, I'm just saying that I could have used a little more discipline when I was growing up. I could have used a little more don't do that. My parents were so liberal that I'd ask them if I could go somewhere, and they would say things like, do you want us to say no? What the hell is that? What do you mean? What does that even mean? How the hell did I grow up with any character whatsoever? Just say no. No, we don't want you to go shoot heroin. We don't want you to do that.
Well, you didn't ask if you're going to go shoot heroin.
Of course not.
You should have asked that, and then they would have
I asked it, hey, can I go out and drive around with my friends and drink in the car after we get a guy who's walking into a liquor store to buy us some Southern Comfort and a six-pack of Heinies? Can I go drive around with them to McDonald's around the city just to see if we know people? Can I do that in a Firebird that's got a Holley double pumper and goes like 150 miles?
Holley double, what the?
With Jensen
double pumper?
Can I go do that? My mom would be like, well, do you want us to say no? No, I want you to say, yeah, have a good time. Don't hurt yourself. Yeah?
Mom
okay.
Mom would probably say, hey, hell yeah, let me go along with you.
Yeah, boy. No, not my mom. And my mom, she would not want to go with us. What she would want me to do is call her every 15 minutes to say that I'm not dead. Hi, I'm not dead. Okay, bye. Yeah, I'll call you if I get in trouble. Did you ever once call your parents when you were too drunk? Ever?
No.
All right,
no.
Let me just say, I want to talk about Harry Reid for a minute, because this is politics that I rarely understand how it works. But Harry Reid stifled this immigration legislation. He called upon Bill Frist to do a certain type of vote in order to stop the legislation in the Senate until after the break, because here's what happened. So George Bush blames him of single-handedly thwarting action on immigration legislation. And Harry Reid, Mr. Spine of the Day, says President Bush has as much credibility on immigration as he does on Iraq and national security. And the thing that could stick, that he has, that his approval ratings are that low, that makes sense. Like, this guy's got no credibility whatsoever. But the reason he stopped it was because Republican operatives were planning a Spanish-speaking ad campaign in New Mexico, Arizona, and Nevada, basically blaming the Democrats for passing legislation that included Republican provisions about treating immigrants, illegal immigration, as a felony. So they were using legislation that they crafted, okay, to push through, and then they were going to use that provision in the legislation that makes it a felony to be an immigrant and blame the Democrats for that and use it moving towards the midterms to demonize the Democrats.
That's desperate.
It's desperate.
That's Rovalian.
Exactly. And it's pretty crafty. And, you know, Harry Reid stood up. He spoke out, and it went back and forth. I'm proud of him. Is that okay if I be proud of him? That's all right, isn't it?
Sure.
Hey, a lot happened in the world today, and we want to make sure you're up to speed and informed. So here's tonight's edition of the Mark Maron Show's Short Order News. Iran's hardline president, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, vowed today that his country won't back away from uranium enrichment and said the world must treat Iran as a nuclear power. Iran is still thought to be years away from a full-scale nuclear program, but is already way ahead of earlier predictions in the areas of taunting and threatening. China and Russia have also expressed concern over Iran's nuclear program and say they hope the dispute can be settled diplomatically. If not, they will have no choice but to do nothing. A mob of Islamic radicals yesterday stoned the offices of Indonesia's Playboy magazine 5 days after its first copies went on sale. Even though it is a Muslim country, Indonesia's Playboy shows plenty of bush, but he looks more like a monkey and has blood on his hands. That's a heavy-handed but funny joke. The hardline Muslims who attacked the building say Playboy degrades women, which deeply offends them because that's their job. An embarrassed charter school in Utah has discovered a book. Did you like that? The flop sweat sigh? Whew. Some people are saying that, you know, it sounds like I'm doing jokes to nobody here. But I'm not. I'm doing them for the people out in radio land. It's just me and you in this room. I'm delivering the jokes.
I've read all these jokes about five times before I come here.
Well, then you should stop. Here we go. An embarrassed charter school in Utah has discovered it booked the wrong Jon Stewart for its annual gala, thinking the man was comedian Jon Stewart, star of The Daily Show. Already, the school has had to refund money to hundreds of disappointed ticket holders who look forward to a full night of gratuitous mugging and fake sincerity. That's
Oh, man.
That's the short order news for tonight. You like that one, don't you?
Oh, tickled me.
Yeah, well, you know.
That was a good joke. That was well constructed.
I'm turning the other cheek on that one. That's going to be the last thing that I say in a petty way about John Leibowitz. That's going to be it. You know, he's got his sing. I got mine. A lot more people are able to see and hear his sing, but that's okay. I'm a gem. I'm rarefied. It's not easy to get the Mark Maron show. You have to do some looking. You got to do some poking around.
You got to work for it. You have to work for it.
Got to kick in some dough. We're freeing some of the interviews. We're freeing them. Do you understand?
Freeing them?
Yeah, at markmaron.com. We're going to be posting interviews and some of the comedy pieces because I know that Air America Premium is charging for the podcasts, and that's fine and good, but we think some people should have the funny and the information, so you go to markmaron.com and get it. And you can also sign up for the podcast for the whole show. See how that works? And no, I'm not making any money off those podcasts, by the way. Thank you to all the bloggers.
I am.
Join the party. You are?
Yes.
Give me some, man. Buy me dinner, man. Buy me dinner.
I'll,
buy me dinner. Good night, sheeple. Oh, so fat.